You're listening to The Current on CBC Radio 1 and on Sirius Satellite Radio 137.
So I know that as he is looking down upon us tonight, he's saying, Paul, this is a big day, but it's not the day. That will come many years hence.
That was the sound of Paul Martin Ascendant in November of 2003, invoking his late father and looking toward posterity as he assumed the leadership of the Liberal Party of Canada and of the country itself. Scarcely more than 2 years and two humbling election results later, Mr. Martin is stepping down from the leadership of the Liberal Party. If he was praised for the dignified, gracious way in which he resigned, few praised him or his team of handlers for the way this election campaign was conducted, or even for the way he conducted himself as Prime Minister. Some might argue that Mr. Martin is a tragic figure in the Shakespearean mold, like King Lear, a good man who allowed himself to be manipulated by power-hungry advisors. Or perhaps he's Hamlet, spurred on by his father's ghost, but undone by his failure to act decisively. Either way, he'll be remembered as a brilliant finance minister who reached the political summits he so desired, only to overreach and fall into disfavor and derision. To find out how the intrepid deficit slayer became the ineffectual Mr. Dithers of Canadian politics, I'm joined by two Liberal insiders. Herb Dhaliwal spent three terms in former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien's cabinet. He is in our Vancouver studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Anna Maria.
And in our Toronto studio, Akash Maharaj is the former National Policy Chair of the Federal Liberal Party. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Herb Dhaliwal, you were cabinet colleague with Mr. Martin for many years. How do you explain the fact that he could be such a success as a finance minister and then a disappointment as prime minister?
Well, I think one of the things you learn, and I express this publicly as well, is the very people who win you the leadership race within the party are not necessarily the right people to win you the election, because there are different skill sets, different requirements. And I think there was three strategic errors made which brought us to a situation that we are now as a Liberal Party. One is that the Martin regime, they tried to distance himself from the Chrétien years, which was a mistake. Second, there was not a very strong attempt to bring the party together to unite us to be one strong party. And thirdly, where many of the experienced ministers who had a national profile across the country, like Mr. Manley and Mr. Rock and Sheila Copps, could have been extremely helpful in this election to make sure that we win the government. Unfortunately, they were not there, and that hurt us as a Liberal Party.
So you're talking then about the rift that just became too deep.
Yes, I think that one of the things was right after Mr. Martin got the leadership, there should have been a real attempt to bring the party together and unite the party. And as a united party, we would have been much stronger to fight the election. And that never really happened. And we didn't really have the party together. And these divisions hurt us in the election.
Akash, you're nodding.
I agree. I think that Mr. Martin was himself a victim of the same forces that beset the Liberal Party. That is, a victim of early and perhaps even excessive success. There's no denying that the party, like Mr. Martin, have had a long association with power, and regrettably, that has made us a magnet for people who are liberals of convenience rather than liberals of conscience. I think that the result that we saw on election day on Monday, quite a dark night of the soul for the Liberal Party, was nevertheless not as bad as it might have been. We did recover somewhat, in large measure, because I think that Canadians did not reject liberalism itself. They instead rejected a campaign that appeared to lack the courage of liberal convictions. Even as our support dwindled throughout the campaign, there were continual convulsions of national opinion, which suggests to me that Canadians desperately wanted to vote for the party of Laurier, of Pearson, and of Trudeau, and only reluctantly came to the conclusion that that party wasn't on the ballot in this election.
Well, let's talk about the expectations dashed then. When Paul Martin became the Liberal leader, the question wasn't whether he could win a majority. The question was how many majorities he would win. So what happened? Why do you think he never delivered on the expectations?
To a certain extent, the expectations were excessive. Few people could have won seats in every region of the country. It was some of the expectations were just not mathematically possible. To a certain extent, those expectations were inflated because of the very long, unusually long leadership race that he ran whereas Chrétien's genius as a politician was to suppress expectations and then surprise everyone by exceeding them. Martin, by virtue of running a long campaign, raised expectations to the level that he could never meet them. And in addition to that, the early promise was disappointed by the divisions that he sowed in order to become leader. The very means that he employed in order to become leader made it impossible for him to be an effective leader.
Herb Dallowa, what do you think?
Well, I think Akash is right in that huge expectations were created. And it's partly because it's tempting to say whatever groups want to hear during the time the leadership to get their support. But the difficult part when you do that is how do you deliver on those promises or those discussions you have. And this was the problem. There was huge expectations. And I remember Liberal Party members and the media saying Paul Martin's going to win 200 seats. Well, that scared the daylights out of the conservatives, the progressive conservatives at the time, and the Alliance Party, and actually forced them to come together because they felt they would be destroyed by such a juggernaut as Paul Martin because he was going to win so many seats across the country. And those expectations were extremely high, and he wasn't able to deliver on them. The other thing is, we lost some clarity, you know, everything was a priority and people didn't have a clear vision of where the Liberals were going. And after you've been there 12 years, people still want to know, even though we had the best economy and we changed Canada from 1993 to be one of the strongest countries in the world in terms of economy, the inflation, the interest rate, the employment, those were all very positive things. And it's very rare to see someone under such a strong economy lose the election. But I think it goes right back to the divisions in the party, which hurt us. But I should also remind our listeners that really it could have gone either way in terms of a minority government. If the Liberals would have won 12 seats from the Conservatives, we would have had a minority government as well. So in that way, we weren't that far away. And a lot changed in the last week of the election. Because as people saw that the Conservatives were moving to a majority, they were very suspicious of a majority, and they wanted to keep the Conservatives on a leash. And
well, either that or the polls weren't quite accurate, right? We don't really know what was behind that. But let me ask you, you know, we know plenty about Paul Martin's qualities as finance minister, and you talked about the health of the economy. But as prime minister, he was derided as a waffler, as someone who couldn't say no to anyone. Does he actually possess the qualities that would have made a good prime minister, do you think, Mr. Dallowa?
I think he did. I think he was a very capable individual. Very hardworking, wanted to do the right thing. I think that too often he fell to the pressure of the media and others in the hope that this will provide him with a majority government. And sometimes when you do that, you hurt yourself. And I think that that's partly what happened to Paul Martin. He was his ambition to win a majority government clouded a clear judgment.
I want to ask about hubris as well. You know, how much were Mr. Martin and his inner circle guilty of hubris, and how much did this contribute to their downfall?
I think a great deal. To a certain extent, if there were inflated expectations, those expectations were believed by his inner circle. And unfortunately, many leaders, and he was amongst them, made the mistake of surrounding themselves with people who simply say what they want to hear rather than what they need to know. I don't think there's anyone more disappointed in the outcome of Mr. Martin's tenure than Mr. Martin himself. I do think that he had the qualities necessary to be a great prime minister. But at the end of the day, the lesson that all of us have to take away from this is that no matter what the political operatives say, no matter what the spin doctors at the polls might tell you, that if you try to sell your soul to achieve power, ultimately you'll end up with neither.
Herb Dallowa, is that what he did?
Well, one of the things that the people behind him were, they were people that come from pollsters and focus groups. And therefore, that's why
they weren't street fighters. They didn't know the street.
And they didn't have this political wisdom. What they were responding all the time, and this was always seen in the government, how they would respond one way and then change and respond, where they were always looking at focus groups and on the polls instead of having a clear long-term view of where they were headed. And I think this caused him a lot of problems because it was all reactive instead of having a long-term view, a clear vision from where they were going, and some clear principles that they're working from, but they're willing to change very quickly to respond to the polls and focus groups. And I think that was one of the downfalls of the people advising him.
So what do you think the Liberals should be looking for in a new leader?
Well, I think, number one, someone who can unite the party. I think that's extremely important. Someone who can build bridges. Someone who has a clear vision of where they want to take Canada create the Liberal Party that it has been, a welcoming party, a party that believes in fairness, a party that wants to make its tent as big as possible and create this huge coalition that we're known to create to bring people together and from coast to coast to coast.
I think, we need a leader who will resist the impulse to exercise victor's justice after the leadership race. We need one who will understand that no matter how successful or how powerful he is, he's not so successful or so powerful that he can do without the mass of the party. But in addition to that, I think that the Liberal Party itself must not succumb to the temptation of expecting the next leader to be a messianic figure. The party itself has to take its share of responsibility for the fact that we allowed the party to atrophy in the vain hope that a single person could lead us to victory. At the end of the day, to be a Liberal is to believe that the wisdom of society lies in the many and not the few. And unless the party takes a hard look at itself, unless it rejuvenates internally, unless we suppress the illiberal impulse that's been galloping through it to equate dissent with disloyalty, then no matter how talented or well-intentioned our next leader is, he will be a prisoner of these same ills.
Gentlemen, we have to leave it there, but thanks for discussing this today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. For a pleasure.
I've been speaking with Herb Dhaliwal. He was a cabinet minister under the former Prime Minister, Jean Chrétien. He was in our Vancouver studio this morning. Akash Maharaj is the former national policy chair of the Federal Liberal Party, and he was in Toronto.